Welcome to He Said, She Said Razor Branding Podcast with Michael Russo and Jackie Russo. To learn more about how to improve your brand, visit brandrusso.com.
Hi, welcome to He Said, She Said Razor Branding Podcast with Michael and Jackie Russo. Our guest today, Rachel Hernandez, is awesome. She's director of brand strategy. She works at The Hoth. She handles content creation. I'm going to read her official introduction, but what I'm going to tell you all is stick around and listen the whole way to the end. She is dropping insights and tips and pointers the whole way through. It is, I mean, top 10 guest, Michael, don't you think?
Well, no, great. Yeah, absolutely. And I know everybody keeps talking about, it's like, you know, it's hard because we talk about SEO, we talk about AI, there's certain things that keep coming up. There's a reason for that because it's topical and it's important and it's changing constantly. And we talk about that a lot with her, is that how rapidly all this is evolving. So I thought it was very insightful and she was delightful and very smart and knowledgeable in the space. And I think, you know, got a lot out of it.
And she tolerated our shenanigans, which I always appreciate.
Yes.
All right. So I want you all to meet Rachel Hernandez, the director of brand strategy at NextNet Media. In this role, she spearheads the world's largest global network of trusted media outlets, link partners, and global news websites, catapulting clients to online retailing success with high authority backlinks and targeted organic visitors. Y'all stick around and listen because you're going to learn some stuff. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for letting me come on and talk to y'all today.
Well, Rachel, it's great to have you here. I know that Christina was real excited when you accepted our invitation because she is always challenged to find new guests who are going to bring a new perspective. And I think that with all of the focus on digital and what that means and how it works, you were the perfect next person for us to talk to in this interview series. So maybe, you know, if you don't mind, kind of start with a little bit of your take on digital. You know, as a director of brand strategy with a focus and concentration in the digital space, what does that mean to you?
Oh my gosh. I mean, that's such a big question. That means so much. And for me, it actually like has a very personal part of my story into the world of branding and content marketing and SEO to a certain extent, because I always wanted to be a storyteller and a writer. And so I went to college in 2003 and actually like was a creative writing major and thought that I would work in publishing or something similar, because while there were like websites and people were kind of like, it was still wild, wild west. It's what like AI is now. I feel like the internet back then, and what digital gave me and the opportunity for so many creatives who had sort of been confined like to these smaller spaces is just like a whole world opened up where we could be creative, like on a very large scale, where you didn't necessarily have to have the connections or an internship because you came from a family with money and you could, you know, go to college and intern at this publishing house. So for me, it's really meant freedom in so many ways. From a marketing perspective, it gets very complicated. And man, these past few years have been quite the ride. But I think it's just like an extension of that evolution from even 20 years ago. What we're seeing now with the way that AI and technology is impacting how we create digital content, I think is probably quite similar to what the industry was going to 20 years ago when Google was really starting to hit the ground running, SEO became an industry, and it started to sort of reshape the way we looked at marketing in general.
I think, you know, that, there's so much into that. You're right. I mean, that was a loaded question Jackie threw on you right away, but it was.
Hey, let's start right there, right? We have only up to go from here.
Yeah. But no, I mean, and we've talked about this so much and like everybody's talking about it. I just went to a legal conference for a client of ours in Florida, and we were there just as to kind of shoot them and walk around with them and whatnot. But I listened to all these attorneys talk about the state of AI. That was the main topic. Everybody talked about it in their space, you know, and how it was affecting them and how it was really a game changer. I'm like, Okay, yeah. I mean, I assume it's for everybody across all industries and how it's happening. But in our industry, it is a very much of a game changer in an alarming way and in a positive way. I'm kind of geeked out by how cool it is and how neat it is. And Jack and I talk about this a lot, and she's constantly talking me off the ledge because I'm like, you know, I remember all these changes. I remember, you know, getting out of college when we really started to really use computers. I mean, you know, and really started in the invention of the internet. You know, I hate to say that I'm the grandfather here, but I remember when those things happened, you know, getting off of AOL and modems and the digital age and Google, all these things. But this seems different. This seems like, okay, we are light years moving so fast. Yeah. And it's like, what's going to happen tomorrow, not next year, you know, and everything's at that pace. So I don't know where I'm getting at with all that, but it's kind of nerve wracking.
No,
you know?
It's true. And you know, I've been doing a talk. I was speaking at Digital Summit. So I'll usually do a few of those conferences and some others, and I am talking about AI because that's what people want to hear about. They want to hear about where it's going and how to use it. And, you know, I've been fortunate to speak at conferences for the past few years now. This is really the one where I am updating my deck like every day because something is happening. This is not like a few Google updates over the past year where we're looking at different ranking factors or, you know, like Meta introducing a different way of presenting paid ads. This is every single day. Something new is shifting. And all of these different media companies with platforms that marketers like me and you guys and your listeners rely on are also in turn feeling the need to respond incredibly quickly. So it's not like we're pivoting like every quarter or we're pivoting every year. Or we're looking at the data. It's like everybody has to be nimble all the time if they're going to stay relevant and if they're going to show up on these platforms where they're reaching their users to learn more about them. I mean, and that's even before we get into all like the deep fake kind of scary, crazy things or, you know, whether or not you even own the content that you create with AI. I think that's going to be a thing because it is, in essence, like plagiarized content that's been Frankenstein together by an algorithm that you did not create yourself. I see that becoming an issue in the next.
The thing is, it's compiling it from information that your information, like it's grabbing things that you've put out in the world. So your intellectual property is now being borrowed to create other things without your permission. So nobody really wants to talk about that, but that's a whole nother thing, you know?
All the time. Yeah. And I mean, and it is like going back to what we were initially talking about, because I do sometimes reflect on this, especially I came up as a copywriter and I ran a large team of copywriters at an agency who had to create content for industries that they presumably didn't know anything about. And how do you do that? You do a Google search, you grab the bits that you like the best, you throw it into an outline, and then you kind of restructure it and recreate it so that you or your client likes it. AI is essentially doing the same thing. It's just doing it really, really, really fast. And now that is going to be the norm. But I do think it does open up some interesting possibilities where we really do start to value that thought leadership and that originality and that authenticity. And I think we've seen that with like Reddit and TikTok and these platforms that are becoming more popular for those reasons. I think people will be craving that more than they were. And we may see a shift in how content works and why it hits and how it connects and why it goes viral and things like that. Because if everybody can produce a lot of crap all the time, really, really fast, the diamonds are going to be the ones that stand out.
Is it my turn to talk again? I just wasn't sure. The love fest that y'all have started. See, here's the thing, Rachel. When I see somebody who's like a digital specialist and all in the digital space and has been doing it at a high level for a long time like you have, I go with the assumption that you're going to be kind of on my team, which means you're going to embrace the digital, you're embracing the change. But all of a sudden you show up and you start saying things like the way Michael feels, AI is awful, bad things can happen. And I'm thinking, I was stacking the deck in my favor and somehow I got bamboozled here.
I think Rachel's toeing the line. She's on both sides of the line on that one.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to be like, I think both are true. And, you know, one of the things that, like, I love using AI for certain things. I use it every day. I don't use it to write content. I use it to brainstorm. I use it to come up with ideas. I'll use it to consolidate survey, like when we survey our clients or we survey our customer success teams for feedback. It's been super useful to like condense that information in a way like I can save hours, right? As opposed to like sitting there, it's almost like an Excel formula.
Right.
I use it sometimes. I use some puns in my marketing because we have a lot of millennials that we reach out to, and we do, you know, and I say, come up with 20 SEO puns based on Taylor Swift songs. And I mean, I would love to spend a day doing that personally, but I don't have the time to spend a day doing that personally. So it can be super wonderful. And it actually can be a way to, I think, save the time and the energy and the brain source, where if you're taking 5 hours out of your day and you're kind of banging your head against the keyboard or whatever, you get AI to do the dirty work. And then you actually do have the time to level up and operate at a higher level.
I totally agree with all that, but it's like the quote, Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. You know, I mean, that's the thing that I see. Cause again, I was at this lawyer conference and every lawyer got up and talked about they were so proud of themselves for, you know, my entire presentation was done with AI. And I'm like, yeah. And it sounds just like the other guys and the other guys and the other guys. No one stood out. There was no differentiation. Nobody, I mean, I'm like, y'all are missing the point of all this, like of having that thought. And so I call it, we're entering the age of mediocrity right now because there's so much content that is all the same. And it all sounds fine. Are we okay with fine? Is that where we're heading? You know? And so, like you said, hopefully the diamonds do shine through and people start to appreciate those things. And as a business owner, hopefully you're looking for those things too and not taking the shortcut. Cause I've had clients send me AI articles and say, look, hey, I threw this into ChatGPT. And I'm like, yeah, I can tell. It sounds
spotted a mile away.
Yeah.
I talk about this a little bit because I have to do a lot of paid advertising as part of my job as marketing director. When I first started, I'm not a direct response person. I am more of a brand storyteller. So that's always kind of been, whenever that assignment comes to my desk, like the little thorn in my side. So I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to use ChatGPT to write these posts to get people to, you know, book a call. Mm-hmm. And it all looks, once you see it, you can spot it a mile away. It loves an emoji. And I can see it on LinkedIn. I see it on Facebook. You see it all the time. And I don't mean to like come down on anybody who has pursued this, but I was like, what does this remind me of? And it is to me like this spitting image of when like somebody that you went to college or high school with joined like an MLM. And they're trying to get you to join their team. And I'm like, it has the same exact energy. And like, it could be any MLM, but you know, as soon as you see that message in your inbox, you're like, they're trying to get me to join their downline. And that's how those unfiltered, like ChatGPT pieces of content, which again, I think are useful when you bring the actual brain and the connection to it, but that's how they read to me now.
I mean, when I think about ChatGPT and multi-level marketing, I'm like, she's not wrong. Because really, you're not. There is definitely a connection there in terms of how it makes you feel and how it's coming across. And it's that like, hey, here to play. Want to do something? You know, it's all very awkward. But when you talk about how you're using it, and I know you do a lot of teaching on this subject, what are the kind of... what's the path forward for somebody who maybe like Michael knows he should use it, is a little hesitant about it? How do you gently pull them into the waters of AI?
To be clear, before you answer that, Rachel, I do use it. I'm aware of it. And you're right. Like I can take all this copy and shove it in there and summarize it and put it into a paragraph. That is like huge time suck, you know, and all those little things are great. I just am... Yeah, that's it. She paints a picture that I'm like, I'm afraid of technology. I'm not afraid of it but I'm afraid of it in the wrong hands, you know, that kind of thing. Cause it makes me feel icky sometimes when I do it. Like I'll put something in there and it puts it back, and I'm a writer too. And so I'm like, Yeah, I feel kind of filthy after that process. Like I've just totally cheated the system, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I do think it depends on the content you're creating, but honestly, for me, variations are probably the biggest win I've gotten from AI because or using it. And that is something that I will literally use ChatGPT for like every single day because we do a lot of A/B testing. We're trying to like do things with different subject lines. Again, when I'm doing like a social media post or like a paid ads post, just say rewrite it. And you got to kind of follow up, like make it shorter, write it again, but like don't use the emojis, you know, write it 10 more times, but in 10 words or less. And from there, like I'm usually able to kind of grab some things that I think will connect, maybe add my own little tweaks. But that to me is like one of the ways where it saves a ton of time because I could write like a 5,000 word white paper. And then when it comes time to write a caption for it, like all of a sudden my mind just goes completely blank. And so that's kind of where, as a content creator, I find use for it. I will say like I've seen some cool things and this actually might be a scary one, but there are like some platforms, I think HeyGen's one of them, where you can sort of like, if you want to do a very simple talking head video, you can upload like a video of you speaking the way, like if I'm speaking right here into the Zoom and then add text and it's uncanny. I've seen some examples where,
yeah,
it is like, but it if you do it right, I mean, if you're in an industry where you have to put videos like that out, and I'm thinking maybe if you're like in real estate or something like that where you know you're always kind of going on social and talking about these things, I think that's a really good use case.
Well, and using the languages, right?
Wait, hold on. First of all, I want people to know which one she's talking about so they can go test it. What's that one called?
So it's HeyGen. So it's H-E-Y like hey, and then Gen, probably like generative AI, but G-E-N.
Got it.
Yeah.
But have you seen them do the language thing where the same principle, but then they start speaking Mandarin and Russian and German, and it looks like they are speaking the language. Yeah. It is uncanny.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll say like, I have not personally used that for video. And we all know that like translation writing tools in general are like, kind of, again, they miss the nuance, which is what even AI, when I'm doing it directly to English, does. But for some industries, that can be incredibly useful. You know, you want to reach an audience in a country where the majority of your team does not speak the language. I mean, because if not, you're hiring somebody off of Fiverr to read a script for you.
Yeah.
You
know? And I found recently, too, and this is probably my own, I'm not to get too much into my you know, weirdnesses, but like I'm starting to say please and thank you to freaking AI, you know? I mean, like, I'm like, cause I'm afraid I'm gonna offend it. And, or then I'll get mad and say, no, that's not right. Do it. I need, cause like my frustration. And I'm like, all right, I need to step back and realize that this is what's going on here, you know? So I'm nervous about that. I tell Jackie all the time, she drives a Tesla, right? And she called it something the other day. I'm like, you need to be careful because
You called it something.
Maybe it was me, but I was like, you know, because when the takeover comes, they're going to remember all that stuff. It's all going to be part of their and recorded. They're going to be
all
like
logged in their MLM.
Yes, exactly. They have the perfect memory. They're going to be like, remember when you called me a name when you were ugly to me in that ChatGPT session where you got mad because I had the wrong whatever. So yeah, we need to be careful. Just keep that in mind.
You're ridiculous. Ridiculous. Okay. So Rachel, tell us about some of the other AIs or tools that you talk about that people should be kind of understanding and checking out.
Yeah. I mean, I use a tool called Copymatic AI. So it's copymatic.ai. And it's sort of similar to, they have like a ChatGPT function, very similar in some ways to like a Jasper, if anybody is familiar with that tool. Mm-hmm. But I like it because it's a very like all in one, and it has sort of different like types of content that it's already trained to create. So you can be like, write out like a value proposition you can put in your business, you can put in, and it'll spit one out to you and some variations. So that's been really fun for me to play with. And I know they are launching, I'm in SEO. So I do marketing for an SEO company. And I know they're launching, something where you can actually use that software to optimize your website even better using AI, which I think is really great. Again, like we don't want to publish AI content as is, but I love those tools where they're just like, hey, the top five things ranking for this keyword you're going for, they look like this. So like, maybe you kind of want to look like this too. Those are super, super useful. Cause I used to do all that stuff like off of spreadsheets and things like that. So I would say Copymatic AI, if you're looking to really like focus on that SEO optimized content for your website, which everybody should be. And then I'll use ChatGPT a lot for social media. We haven't used HeyGen yet for our own marketing. I just think it's a cool tool. I don't do the images yet. I think they're really weird.
They kind of creep me out. I'm not going to lie. Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you're like just having fun and like making a joke for your friends or something.
They have a creepy feel to them, a vibe. I don't know what it is. It's the 3D kind of the modeling of it. And everything I've seen has been like kind of too AI looking. Like it looks like you can tell what it is.
Yeah. It's like marketing shouldn't make people uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, I had, the other day I had, somebody, it was a high school reunion thing that was going on. And I went to this school in South Florida, and they, I don't even talk to most of these people anymore, but I was so angry. I went to Jackie. I was fussing about it because they had posted, hey, I went in and I threw this flyer together, and they took our mascot was the tornadoes. So they had a tornado and it looked like it was AI generated. It had sunglasses on, it had muscles, and it was like flexing at the beach. And I'm like, I was like, I'm not going. Like I'm not hanging out with these people. And I was so angry that they did it. And I know it's not their fault. And I mean, that's, you know, it was cool to do it, right? And I doubt anybody's listening to it from there. But if they are, I'm sorry. But I was so like incensed by it. I'm like, come on, stop it. Like stop it. There's people out there that can do that differently. And it looked like, again, mediocre. It looked just blah, you know?
I think it's just like anybody, and not just marketers, but maybe marketers especially sometimes, because we do get access to all of these tools and we're always being told to like do it faster, like put it out quicker, do it better. We don't have the money to hire a photographer or an artist. So you kind of get a hold of this thing where you throw in some inputs and it can spit it out in a few minutes, and you become more enamored with like that aspect, or even that you can do this thing on your own at all. And same with the content, I think too, that they're not really thinking about like how it actually looks or comes across, because you do want your stuff, whether it's a image or content or a video, to look designed and to look like you actually, put some elbow grease into caring about what you're saying to people.
Well, it reminds me of like when Photoshop really started to hit hard in the industry, and everybody was, you know, all the bells and whistles, and they continually add those to there. I always tell young designers, I'm like, look, you need like five things in Photoshop to do a lot of things you need. Everything else is fun and you can have fun with them, but you really don't need all that all the time. And so it's really, I think, the same thing with AI to a certain extent. Even though it's all new and all, you know, tangible, it kind of don't need all that right away. And if you start throwing it all into the basket, it's going to get really messy quick, you know?
100%. Yeah.
So just to switch gears on y'all a little bit, unless Michael wants to keep talking about AI, because I know how much he enjoys it.
We can move on. I think the last thing I'll say about that is, and I think what people don't understand is that this is a learning model, and that's why it's moving so fast. And the fact that the more we use it, the more it's going to get smarter, the more it's going to be able to, it's not like there's somebody back there pulling the strings on this stuff. Like they set it up and they let it run. And now it's on its own. Like it is learning at a rapid pace. And every time we do a query or a prompt or whatever, and we feed it information, it takes that information and it learns more. That's the part that can sound a little scary, frightening, but it's also what's going to make it better over time.
Actually, before we leave that topic, I read something this morning that just has been rattling around in my head, and I would love to hear y'all's opinions on it. So we have all collectively, the three of us, and before we all three got together on this, have for some time now, all been talking about how we use these tools to create our content, how we use these tools to help us with brainstorming or research or writing or just having a thinking partner, whatever that might be. The article that I read today said, we need to start flipping that around. How do we start using AI to talk to other AI? Because if I'm writing something and I'm trying to reach Michael, well, Michael's using AI to sort out what the options are. So I'm not actually reaching Michael. I'm reaching Michael's AI tool.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about all that. That makes my sad a little bit.
Think about it this way. Just like we used to just try to make people happy, you know, we would make brochures to get their attention. We then started doing things to talk to Google because we knew that somebody was going to ask Google, who's the best digital agency for me? And so we had to do things to make sure that Google said, oh, this company's the right choice. Same thing applies. We now have to start thinking, how do we get through not the human clutter of 8,000 ads a day? How do we get through the AI clutter and be on AI's list when someone asks it, just like they ask Google, who's the right choice for me?
Yeah. And I think it's happening now. I mean, in terms of, I know like ChatGPT uses Bing, so that's a whole other thing. But with Google coming out with SGE, like in search generated experience, still rolling it out now, but like big rollout probably in the next few months, where a search query so much of the time is going to have like an AI experience right on that Google page, where you're not going to necessarily have to click on a link. And Google's already doing that. Like we also already have like featured snippets. People also ask like images shopping, but it's going to get more Googlier that way. And SEOs now we're trying to figure out like, how do we create content that shows up not just in the list of websites to click on, but in the AI results. And what does that optimization look like? I mean, we don't know yet, and we don't have that data, and it's not in your Google Search Console, and it's not in your analytics. So it's going to be a lot of like guessing and trial and error and taking a look at what's getting ranked and trying to unfurl that and recreate it. But that's happening now, you know?
Right.
And from a media standpoint, we talk about this, you know, a lot, like, you know, we went from, there was TV, radio, print, and collateral, right? And
well, then radio was first. So it was radio.
Yeah.
Then actually newspaper, then radio, then TV.
Yeah. And you have things around in there, but then over the past 20 years that has grown exponentially, it's changed dramatically. And then the past 5 years has changed dramatically. And the past year has changed dramatically. And what you're talking about is like 10 years in a year of change. Yeah. Like, so we went from here to here to here to where it's like, I don't know. I mean, it's difficult. You know, if I was running a business for myself and saying I have all these ad options, it's easier from, I know I run a business, but I'm just saying, like, if I was starting out from scratch or whatever, if I was the marketing director of somewhere, I mean, we get the luxury of being an agency that comes in and says, all right, let's look at the whole picture and let's help you decide and let's help you figure out, you know, based on your audience, who do you want to talk to? What are the vehicles, all these different things. But when you're inside of that and you don't always, a lot of big giant companies don't have big agencies working with them. They have an in-house department and they're trying to figure this stuff out. And it can be overwhelming, I would think.
Yeah. Well, I think now is the time, now more than ever is the time. And I know resources are limited. They're always going to be limited, but it's the time to invest in working with an agency or working with a consultant or people who have been looking at this, because to me, this is a ground floor situation. And those who do get in when it matters are going to see the long-term rewards, because that authority is going to build on itself. And so if in a few years from now you're scrambling, I think it is going to be really difficult to catch up.
Right. I think that the interesting thing about how all of this is, and to Michael's point, and really to yours as well, Rachel, it's the rapid expansion, the rapid growth, the rapid adoption. And so it's, I don't know that we can keep up or catch up. I think we have to just find ways to carve out our place for it. You know, it's so not everybody can know everything. So you carve out your one little niche, you dive into being even more of a specialist.
Yes.
I think in some ways this helps us, because if this just allows more people to create more content, and more content is bad content, so there's just more clutter, the human voice stands out. If more people start to say, wait a minute, I can't keep up with all these things, I'm just going to carve out my one little place and be a specialist in this area, then that becomes magnetic.
I think I agree with that 100%.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just struggling with, I have Reed AI on our Zoom chats, right? And so just now, it hasn't done this until recently, but now I have this little sidebar that's up there, and it is counting my words per minute. And it's freaking me out because I'm talking so much faster than both of y'all. Y'all are like in the green. Y'all are like 186 words a minute. And you're perfectly aligned, and you're going to get a great review at the end. I'm like 260. I'm like almost doubling what y'all are doing. And it's really freaking me out. So anyway, that's AI also, right?
Yes, yeah. That's AI. But you know what's weird to me is that I'm usually the one that is this fast talker. And so I'm shocked to hear that you are getting dinged where I am not.
Yeah, you're at 180. You're right on the cusp, Jackie, of going talking too fast.
I'm going to slow it way down.
Rachel is perfect. She's like down in the green zone. I get excited though, and I start
rambling. I didn't
want to
know.
You're killing it, Rachel. You're killing it, according to Reed AI. So, but engagement is high. Engagement is 94, which is really good. Sentiment 83, probably a little better on there. And the Reed score is 88. So I think we're doing well.
Well, let's hope the listeners think so too, because that's what matters right now.
I'm sorry.
Not your AI stats. Let's go a little analog just for a minute, because I think we started off way high, not just digital, but AI level. Let's bring it back down. Let's talk about storytelling. Take the AI out of it. Take all the Google stuff out of it. Just back to the roots of it. Rachel, where do you land on the philosophies around storytelling, how you use it, your process? Talk to us.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of marketing, I don't have like the most groundbreaking idea, but I am a big fan of the hero's journey. And I think one of the reasons is because I've worked at agencies and at companies and done marketing where, even though people understand sort of maybe the concept or like that this is a good way to draw their user in, so many marketers and businesses are so product forward or so in love with what they do that they miss that connective tissue as to where their user fits in and what impact that product can truly have on their experience here on the earth, be it, you know, whether or not you're selling shoes or you're selling life insurance, or if you're like me and you're selling marketing, you know, there's always a place where you can connect your user to how you will make an impact on their life for the better and also make it about them. So like for the Hoff, for instance, so much of our go-to-market messaging is around simplifying SEO and setting and your success. And so those are sort of our foundational tenets, because this is an industry or the industry I am in is one that feels very complicated and hard and scary. And we just talked about some of the reasons why. And where people like the success feels nebulous. So when we like kind of touch on those two things for our users and the stories we tell, whether they be something as obvious as a case study or whether it's just like a clever sort of, you know, byline on a post or something, we want to make sure that they're the star of the journey. And it's not just like optimized content and link building, because who cares? I don't care about that. I care about getting to the top of page one of Google and being top of mind with my users.
100%.
Jackie and I have debated this a lot lately. I'm sorry, Jackie.
No, you're good.
I agree with the story and having your hero, the journey and all that. She read a book a while back about...
Do you, though? Agree?
I do.
Sometimes when I mention it, you give me a hard time.
No, I don't like the formula that you have sometimes. Because she... was it Don Miller? Dan Miller? Don Miller?
It's Donald story Miller brand? Story brand. But don't make it sound like I read a book and I just repeat that over and over again.
No, I'm just saying that particular thing. And but he's obviously found a way, and he's probably did fine before that, but he's found a way to write a book and monetize his system into the story brand system, right? And he has a people that build websites around it and all these things. And I think the problem with that, why I push back on that sometimes, is because it gets so formulaic that you can see those websites a mile away. It's like, oh, they must have read the story brand. And oh, they're putting the hero in the front because there's the hero, there's the villain, there's the this, there's the that. So you follow these steps and you get through it, and it gets to be really not good, you know, because you have to put, like, we have a client that really pushes for that, right? And so, because he read the same book. And so I have to say you in everything. And just by, that's not the way you do it. You know, like, you can't, because you can still talk about me and involve the story. There's a balance is what I'm getting at, you know, and just by following the system doesn't always work out the way you want it to.
I agree with that too. I think it's, well, and I think these formulas and these sort of concepts are useful. And especially like when you're trying to get buy-in from a client, or if you're like me and you have an executive team and a board to report to who kind of, you know, is like, why aren't you talking about how great we are all the time? Like, we just got this. And it's like, because we sound like jerks when we do that in that way. So I think the concepts are useful, but you absolutely, and this is where I think AI still falls short, is there is a language and a musicality and all of that to creative marketing and marketing, creating marketing collateral. And that's why I think it is a great space for creatives, and there's room for analysts, and there's room for people like me who got in trouble in elementary school for reading during recess and not connecting with the other children. Like, so you kind of also have to speak the language, but the concepts are good for people to sort of get an idea of the framework. And then once you understand the framework, you can kind of play around a little bit and add those other elements.
Yeah, I like that. What were you gonna say, Jackie? I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was just gonna say that I feel like there is anytime
that
you're
part of the cool kids, you feel like you're not part of the cool group because you're not in the creative hip class.
I have a hand gesture, but I just remembered we're on video, so I'm not gonna use it. Just recalled that, so I'm gonna keep my fingers to myself.
I'll cut all this out. Go ahead.
No, you're not going to cut it out is the thing. Unless you can edit it to make me look dumber, then you would totally do that. No, what I wanted to say, the whole, it sounds formulaic. Having a process, and whether it's the Disney version or the story brand version or the Razor branding version, whatever, the process ensures that you're going to follow the steps to get to the right answer every time. And even when you're doing creative copywriting, I still think that's important. What I think happens is people who are not talented copywriters don't understand how to adapt the process and make the changes necessary to come up with the right answer, or recognize that the answer is good or bad. And so they just fill in the blank to the formula, and therefore it sounds formulaic. Processes don't make you formulaic. People with not as much talent or skill is how things end up sounding formulaic.
And that's why you should still have human writers on your teams.
Exactly. See, full circle all the way back around. The value of humans in this whole process.
Agreed.
I'm a fan of the humans. I'm not anti-human. I like humans. I am one. Married to one, raised some, you know, work with a few. Humans are good. But speaking of working with a few, Rachel, talk to me about managing creatives, how you've done it, when you've done it, where you've done it. Were you married to one when you did it?
No, I was married to a coder. Right. So the opposite. Well, I don't know. He might be mad that I said that. When I started at the Hoff 8 years ago, they are an SEO company, and it's kind of crazy to say this out loud, but it's true, is SEO, even just like 10 years ago, wasn't really associated with content as much as links. So I had a background in writing for different agencies and copywriting, and I was ready to kind of move into the next thing. I was doing a lot of email back then. And they were starting a product called Hoff Blogger, which is now one of their biggest products. They create human written about 20,000 pieces of content a month. We're a very big agency. And I was in charge of hiring, well, building the product, but that included hiring the team of writers. And it's very interesting to talk about this because a lot of it was formulas, because when you order content from the Hoff, you could order 10 pieces of content and it could be written by 10 different writers, but it all has to be for your brand and it all has to have the same feeling. It's like, you know, I don't want to make it sound like a production line like Starbucks or anything like that, but right. There were sort of similar elements to it. So I did rely on a lot of copywriting formulas. We were very big on AIDA in the intros. We had very specific layouts for SEO optimization, a certain number of H2s and H3s, I had rules like only one exclamation point in a blog post. We had a list of cliches you couldn't use, never use content is king. We're sick of content being king. Like, so there were like very defined elements that every single person had to follow. And we had a very strict QC system too. And that was super important as we scaled out. Cause again, 20,000 pieces of content a month, all having to be quality, all having to have sort of the same vibe. That said, when I was hiring, I was looking for creativity, originality, and humor. And I gave everybody a paid test post. I would kind of change it up every few months or so, because writing for the Hoff was like kind of a thing. So people would try and cheat the system and get in and be like, what was the thing? How'd you do it? But I would look for like a strong voice. And so I knew if I could find that person who had that like magic and that element, and then combine it with a very strong operational system, that it would hit. And it did, you know, it worked out really well. And I'm really proud of that project. Now I'm not a product manager at the Hoff. I'm the director of marketing. So I market the Hoff instead of doing that. But it was a very cool full circle moment for me. Like, as I talked about coming up and digital marketing, opening up doors, we have writers on that team. Right now I'm actually speaking to one who I think I'm going to bring to write some of the marketing materials for my company itself. She's been there for as long as I have. She's 8 years. And for, you know, freelance writers at a marketing agency, there are a lot of people who have been there for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And that's pretty cool. And, again, that full circle moment, but it's really rewarding for me. And I'm glad I still get to do this in my day to day to allow people to make a living writing and doing those creative things. Cause I knew how hard it was to break into, you know, when I was, in my early 20s in like 2005.
I'm just thinking, you know, you're in your early 20s in 2005, the agency that we work at and started back in 2001 was 4 years old. So it's just the time is so oddly relative.
Yeah. Back in the old days. And I'm a big component of, I do not like exclamation points, and I forbid them in most copy. If they get through every once in a while, I get really frustrated by it. I'm like, You're commanding people to be happy. Be happy, exclamation point. I am excited, double exclamation point. I am very excited, 3 exclamation points. Like, that is, just write it. Just make people believe it in the words.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting because I grew up like that too and trained. Like, and you don't bold, I did writing workshops. So you don't bold, you don't italicize, like, get the point across with the words itself. Like, don't rely on the extras to tell somebody how to feel. But what's interesting, I don't know if you guys work with Gen Z yet, but I do have some Gen Z team members, and it's changed. So it's like, why are we talking like we're mad at them? You know,
right.
And you're like,
right.
No, like that's, and that is something that I kind of have to think about too, because we do have, everybody has to be thinking about Gen Z right now, I think, who's in marketing. But it is interesting, those generational things that are shifting, because
they're also, just keep in mind, they're also, and again, we have to market to that audience, but they're also people that no longer use script and handwriting. You probably don't either. Like, you weren't taught to use script, and and very few of them even write anymore. Like, if they're not on a keyboard, you know, like they don't even hand write. Like, my kids barely can write English on a page, you know. So
no, I learned script. I graduated high school in 2003. I'm an elder millennial. Okay. I was still in the script era.
All right. Good.
I think that to answer your original point a second ago, we do have, I just looked, we have a very good balance here between X, Y, and Z. And so I'm actually kind of pleased. We're almost completely one third. Which means that Michael is going to have to let go of his no exclamation point rule. And if we gain nothing else in this podcast recording today, that has made my heart happy, because I love a good exclamation point.
I know you do. And that's, yeah, exactly. You're that person. Like, I'm happy. I want you to know I'm happy.
I am actually happy.
And, I know you are.
We had a professional development session last week, Rachel. And at one point, one of Michael's designers called him Analog. And it was the highlight of my day because it was accurate, and she knew it when she said it, and we all know it. And now that's his new nickname around the office, Analog Mike.
I know. Wow. I'm having some transitional periods. Half of my team right now are the same age as my
50
kids.
Years.
No, but more recently, I have kids now. My kids, we have college-aged employees, you know, and team members. And my kids are college-aged, so I'm really kind of going through that reality check of, yeah.
Are you calling everybody in their 20s college-age? Is that your new approach?
Yes. What? Okay, post-college-age.
Just, you know, most people graduate college at like 21, 22. So I think what you're trying to say is that you have coworkers. So Michael graduated at 27. So it's very confusing to him that people can graduate so early.
I was in school for like 7.5 years, 1 degree, no taking time off. It was a process.
And he's not a doctor. His 1 degree is not in medicine.
No. Oh, did you go to the military? No. Did you take a summer off to travel Europe? No. Just college.
Just a lot of math 105.
Yeah. All right. We're dragging Rachel and stuff. She doesn't. You're making her uncomfortable now. Look at her. She's like, oh my God, I'm in the middle of something I don't want to be part of.
She's like, this is what they warned me about. Graphic design.
Art. Yeah. I got a fine arts degree. I know. What I got was brain science, rocket science. It's art.
She tried to ask that so delicately. She was like, must have been really hard. What was your major? Oh. Yeah, I can't get out of this now. I can't help you, buddy.
We have a daughter graduating in chemical engineering right now, which is, she comes home and every once in a while and comes over and talks about what she's studying, and it's mind blowing. You know how, you know, smart you have to be to really get through this stuff. And I'm like, I can't relate to anything. I mean, I was an art major. I mean, yeah. So I stay out of
every
that.
Time she keeps insisting on showing me her homework, I'm like, please stop. It hurts my head. I don't understand it. I don't like it. I don't know where you came from. It's all just weird. Weird. We have gotten so far off the topic, Rachel. You've been so patient with us. The title of the podcast is He Said, She Said, and now you know why. It's, you know, you were warned. I feel like maybe we should come with a bigger warning label.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. All right, good. Because this is kind of, you get what you get. But listen, to wrap all of this up in some sort of a barely succinct way, thank you for your time, for your insight, for your feedback, for your patience, because this has been awesome. When you, if we want to thank someone who's made it this whole way through and is still with us, because shockingly, I was looking at the stats a week ago, 92% of the people who subscribe and download have listen all the way through, which Michael doesn't believe. So he ends it in weird ways. And then people say, why'd you end it like that? So I think it really is true. So what would you tell the people? What do they need to know? How can they find you? What should they be thinking about moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, you can find me. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. That's sort of where I do at least most of my talking about marketing and things like that. And so that's Rachel A. Hernandez. I can send you guys a link too. And then I would say visit the Hoff blog. I create all of that content. I oversee it. If you are, and I'm assuming people who are listening to this are interested in marketing, we mostly cover SEO, but we do some content strategy. I just did a post today on a digital content strategy guide. I do social media post branding. So just a lot of good resources, a lot of good writing, not AI. It's pretty evident. And our socials. So look up the Hoff on social media. We have a lot of fun. That's my Gen Z guy who keeps me on my toes. But everything from educational content to memes to jokes. So some good stuff there.
That's awesome and perfectly right on time. Rachel, thank you for your time. For everyone listening, thank you for subscribing and downloading and staying through to the end. And we'll see you next time. When the day is through.